Wood was, to us Egyptians, a rare and treasured commodity. Each stick of it had to be carried in by ship or on the back of beasts of burden, from far and foreign lands. Now, wherever we looked, we saw great trees. They grew not in the same dense forests that we had found on the islands in the cataracts, but in lofty groves with broad grassy spaces between the majestic trunks. There was timber enough upon these plains to rebuild all the fleets of all the nations on all the seas of the worlds. More than that, there was enough to rebuild the cities of all the civilized world, and to roof and furnish every room in them. After that, there would still be enough left over to burn as fuel over the centuries to come. We, who all our lives had cooked our food on bricks made from the dung of our animals, stared around us in wonder. This was not the only treasure that we found for our taking in this legendary land of Cush that we had reached at last. I saw them first in the distance and thought that they were monuments of grey granite. They stood upon the yellow grass plains and in the shade beneath the spreading branches of the acacia groves. Then, as we watched in perplexity, these great rocks began to move. Elephants. I had never seen one before, but they could be nothing else. The cry was taken up by those on the deck around me. Elephants! Ivory! These were riches that Pharaoh Mimosa, with all his funerary treasure, could not have dreamed of. Wherever we looked, the vast herd stood. There are thousands of them, Thanos gazed around him, the passion of the huntsman beginning to dawn in his eyes. Just look at them, Taita. There is no end to their numbers. The plains were thronged with living creatures. Not only the herds of elephant, there were antelopes and gazelles, some of which we knew, and others that we had never seen or heard of before. We would come to know all of them well in the future, and find names for their abundant and diverse species. Oryx mingled with herds of purple waterbuck, whose horns curved like the bow that I had built for Thanos. There was spotted giraffe, with necks that reached to the top branches of the acacia trees. The horns that grew from the snouts of the rhinoceros were as tall as a man and as sharp as his spear. The buffalo wallowed in the mud at the river's edge. They were huge bovine beasts, black as Seth's beard and every bit as ugly. We would soon learn the malevolence behind that melancholy stare with which they regarded our passing, and the menace of those drooping black horns. "Unload the chariots from the holds," Thanos roared with impatience. "Put the horses into the traces. The hunt is on." If I had known the danger that we were riding into, I would never have allowed Prince Memnon to mount the footplate behind me as we drove out on our first elephant hunt. To us who knew no better, they appeared such docile brutes, slow and clumsy and stupid. Surely they would be easy game. Thanos was bristling with impatience to go out against this new quarry, and he would not wait for all four divisions of our chariots to be reassembled. As soon as the first division of 50 vehicles was ready, he gave the order to mount up. We shouted challenges to the other drivers and made our wagers on the outcome of the hunt as the long columns of chariots rolled out through the groves along the river bank. "Let me drive, Tata," the prince demanded. "You know I drive as well as you do." Although he was a natural horseman, with gentle hands and an instinctive way with his team, and he had practiced the art almost every day, the prince's boast was unfounded. He certainly was not as good a charioteer as I was. No man in the army could make that claim, certainly not a scamp of 11 years. "Watch me and learn," I told him sternly, and when Memnon turned to Thanos, he supported me for once. "Taita is right. This is something none of us has done before. Keep your mouth closed and your eyes open, boy." Ahead of us, a small herd of these strange grey beasts were feasting on the seed pods that had fallen from the top branches of the trees. I studied them with avid curiosity as we approached at a trot. Their ears were enormous, and they fanned them out and turned to face us. They lifted their trunks high, and I guessed that they were taking up our scent. Had they ever smelled a man or a horse before, I wondered. There were small calves with them, and the mothers gathered them into the centre of the herd and stood guard over them. I was touched to see this maternal concern, and I had the first inkling that these animals were not as slow and stupid as they appeared to be. "These are all females," I called over my shoulder to Thanos on the footplate. "They have young at heel, and their ivory is small and of little value." "You are right," Thanos pointed over my shoulder. But look beyond them. Those two must surely be bulls. See how tall they stand and how massive is their girth. Look how their tusks shine in the sun. I gave the signal to the chariots that followed us, and we veered away from the breeding herd of cows and calves. We ran on, still in column, through the acacia grove towards those two great bulls. As we drove forward, we were forced to swerve around the branches that had been torn from the trees, and to dodge the trunks of giant acacia that had been uprooted. As yet, we knew nothing of the unbelievable strength of these creatures, and I called back to Thanos, "There must have been a great storm through this forest to wreck such destruction." It did not even occur to me that the elephant herds were responsible. They seemed so mild and defenseless. The two old bulls we had selected had sensed our approach and turned to face us. It was only then that I realized the true size of them. When they spread their ears, they seemed to block out the sky like a dark grey thundercloud. "Just look at that ivory," Thanos shouted. He was unperturbed and concerned only with the trophy of the chase, but the horses were nervous and skittish. They had picked up the scent of the strange quarry, and they threw their heads up and crabbed in the traces. It was hard to control them and keep them running straight.
"That one on the right is the biggest," squeaked Memnon. "We should take him first."
The pup was every bit as keen as his sire. "You heard the royal command," Thanos laughed. "We will take the one on the right. Let Kratos have the other. It's good enough for him." So I raised my fist and gave the hand command that split the column into two files. Kratos wheeled away on our left with 25 chariots following him in line astern, while we ran on straight at the huge grey beast that confronted us with yellow shafts of ivory, thick as the columns of the Temple of Horus, standing out from his vast grey head.
"Go hard at him," Thanos shouted. "Take him before he turns to run."
"Hey up!"
I called to Patience and Blade, and they opened up into a gallop. We both expected the huge animal to run from us as soon as he realized that we menaced him. No other game we had ever hunted had stood to receive our first charge. Even the lion runs from the hunter until he is wounded or cornered. How could these obese animals behave differently?
"His head is so big it will make a fine target," Thanos exulted, as he knocked an arrow. "I will kill him with a single shaft before he can escape. Run in close under that long, ridiculous nose of his."
Behind us, the rest of our column was strung out in single file.
Our plan was to come in and split on each side of the bull, firing our arrows into him as we passed, then wheeling around and coming back in classic chariot tactics. We were right on the bull now, but still he stood his ground. Perhaps these animals were every bit as dull-witted as they looked. This would be an easy kill, and I sensed Thanos' disappointment at the prospect of such poor sport.
"Come on, you old fool," he shouted contemptuously. "Don't just stand there, defend yourself."
It was as though the bull heard and understood the challenge. He threw up his trunk and loosed a blast of sound that stunned and deafened us. The horses shied wildly so that I was thrown against the dashboard with a force that bruised my ribs. For a moment I lost control of the team, and we swerved away. Then the bull squealed again, and he ran.
"By Horus, look at him come!" Thanos roared with astonishment, for the beast was not running from us, but directly at us, in a furious charge. He was swifter than any horse, and nimble as an angry leopard set upon by the hounds. He kicked up bursts of dust with each long flying stride, and was on us, before I could get the horses under control again. I looked up at him, for he towered directly over us, reaching out with his trunk to pluck us from the cockpit of the chariot, and I could not believe the size of him, nor the fury in those eyes. They were not the eyes of an animal, but those of an intelligent and alert human being. This was no porcine sloth, but a courageous and terrible adversary that we had challenged in our ignorance and arrogance. Thanos got off a single arrow. It struck the bull in the centre of his forehead, and I expected to see him collapse as the bronze point pierced the brain. We did not know then that the brain of the elephant is not situated where you would expect it to be, but as far back in the mountainous skull, and protected by a mass of spongy bone that no arrow could penetrate. The bull did not even check or swerve. He merely reached up with his trunk and gripped the shaft of the arrow with the tip, as a man might do with his hand. He pulled the shaft from his own flesh and threw it aside and came on after us,
reaching out towards us with the blood-smeared trunk. Huey, in the second chariot of our line, saved us, for we were defenceless against the old bull's fury. Huey came in from the side, lashing his horses and yelling like a demon. His archer from the footplate behind him fired an arrow into the bull's cheek, a hand span below the eye, and that pulled his attention from us. The elephant wheeled to chase after Huey, but he was at full gallop and raced clean away. The next chariot in line was not so fortunate. The driver lacked Huey's skill, and his turn away was inept. The bull lifted his trunk high and then swung it down like an executioner's axe. It struck the near-side horse across the back, just behind the withers, and broke its spine so cleanly that I heard the vertebra shatter like a brittle potsherd. The maimed horse went down and dragged its teammate down with it. The chariot rolled over, and the men were hurled from it. The elephant placed one forefoot on the body of the fallen charioteer, and with its trunk plucked off his head and tossed it aloft like a child's ball. It spun in the air, spraying a bright feather of pink blood from the severed neck. Then the next chariot in line tore in, distracting the bull from his victim. I pulled up my horses at the edge of the grove, and we stared back aghast at the carnage of our shattered squadron. There were broken chariots scattered across the field, for Kratos, out on the left, had fared no better than we had. The two great bull elephants bristled with arrow shafts, and the blood streamed down their bodies, leaving wet streaks on their dusty grey hide. However, the wounds had not weakened them, but seemed only to have aggravated their fury. They rampaged through the grove, smashing up the capsized chariots, stamping the carcasses of the horses under those massive padded feet, throwing the bodies of screaming men high in the air, and trampling them as they fell back to earth. Kratos raced up alongside us and shouted across at us, "By the itching crabs in Seth's crotch, this is hot work. We have lost 8 chariots in the first charge." "Better sport than you expected, Captain Kratos," Prince Memnon yelled back at him. He would have done better to keep his opinion to himself, for up until that moment we had forgotten about the boy and the confusion. Now, however, both Tanos and I rounded on him together. "As for you, my lad, you've had enough sport for one day," I told him firmly. "It's back to the fleet with you, and that right swiftly," agreed Tanos. And at that moment an empty chariot cantered by. I do not know what had happened to the crew. They had probably been thrown from the cockpit, or been plucked out of it bodily by one of the infuriated beasts. "Catch those horses," Tanos ordered. And when the empty chariot was brought back to us, he told the prince, "Out you get. Take that chariot back to the beach and wait there for our return." "My lord Tanos," Prince Memnon drew himself to his full height, reaching as high as his father's shoulder, "I protest." "None of your royal airs with me, young man. Go back and protest to your mother if you must." He lifted the prince with one hand and dropped him into the vacant cockpit of the other vehicle. "Lord Tanos, it is my right." Memnon made one last despairing attempt to remain in the hunt. "And it is my right to wrap the scabbard of my sword around your royal backside, if you are still here when I look around again," said Tanos, and turned his back on him. Both of us put the boy out of our minds. "Gathering ivory is not quite as easy as picking up mushrooms," I remarked. "We will have to think up a better plan than this." "You cannot kill these creatures by shooting them in the head," Tanos growled. "We will go in again and try an arrow through the ribs. If they have no brain in their skull, then surely they have lungs and a heart." I gathered up the reins and lifted the heads of the team, but I could feel that Patience and Blade were as nervous as I was at the prospect of returning to the field. None of us had enjoyed our first taste of elephant hunting. "I'll go at him head on," I told Tanos, "and then turn out to give you a broadside shot into his ribs." I put the horses into a trot, and then gradually pushed up their speed as we entered the acacia grove. Dead ahead of us, our bull rampaged over the ground that was littered with the wreckage of overturned chariots and the bodies of dead men and broken horses. He saw us coming and let out another of those terrible squeals that chilled my blood, and the horses flicked their ears and shied again. I gathered them up with the reins and drove them on. The bull charged to meet us like a landslide of rock down a steep hillside. He was a terrible sight in his rage and his agony, but I held my team steady, not yet pushing them to the top of their speed. Then, as we came together, I lashed them up,
and yelled them into a full mad gallop. At the same moment I swung out hard left, opening the bull's flank. At a range of less than 20 paces, Tanos fired 3 arrows in quick succession into his chest. All of them went in behind the shoulder, finding the gaps between the ribs and burying themselves full length in the seared grey skin. The bull squealed again, but this time in mortal agony. Though he reached out for us, we raced clear of the stretch of his trunk. I looked back and saw him standing in our dust, but when he bellowed again, the blood spurted from the end of his trunk like steam from a kettle. "The lungs," I shouted. "Good work, Tanos. You have hit him through the lungs." "We have found the trick of it now," Tanos exulted. "Take us back. I will give him another one through the heart." I wheeled about, and the horses were still strong and willing. "Come on, my beauties," I called on to them. "One more time. Hi up!"